proceed to the fourth case, the United States v. Beltran. Mr. Brindley.
Please, the court. My name is Beau Brindley, and I represent the defendant appellant, Carlos Beltran. Mr. Beltran appeals following conviction in the district court, and he appeals the district court's decision to deny his motion to suppress evidence. The first part of the argument I'd like to address is the timing of Mr. Beltran's arrest. The district court had found that Mr. Beltran was not arrested at the time when he was first handcuffed. That was merely an investigative detention. The facts of this case suggest that that finding was an error. When agents encountered Mr. Beltran, I think the most important thing here is that they did not immediately put him in handcuffs. They didn't. First, they patted him down. Then they took his keys so he couldn't leave. And then they asked him, will you consent to a search? He said, no, you need a warrant. And then they put him in handcuffs.
Yeah, but look at all the things they knew by the time they put him in handcuffs. He told the agents it would take him an hour to get home. He arrived within 15 minutes and surreptitiously enters the residence. He'd been there for 20 to 25 minutes. I mean, it's pretty amazing that they're waiting outside like that.
But
he lies when he's asked what he was doing. He says he just arrived. He had parked quite a ways away when there were lots of parking spaces very close to the residence. He was sweaty and nervous when he exited the residence. He had a large amount of cash stuffed into a pocket. Materials consistent with packing materials for drugs are found in the garbage cans close to the... I mean, it's reasonable to infer from these facts that he might be trying to destroy evidence. Shouldn't they have arrested him at that
point? I think there's two separate questions. The first question is, was that a custodial arrest when they put the handcuffs on him? And I think it clearly was, because if it was just for safety, they would have done it at first, and they wouldn't have waited to ask him a question and take away his keys. I don't think there's any indication that that was anything but an arrest. No reasonable person who was told, you're under investigation by the DEA, we're taking your keys, and we search your house. No, you can't. All right, we're putting you in handcuffs, we're taking you to the station. Nobody feels free to leave. And so this is not an investigative detention. This was an arrest. Now, that brings me to Judge Rovner's questions about, well, at that time, was there probable cause to arrest him? And I think when we actually consider what facts the government's talking about, I don't think those facts give rise to probable cause to believe that he's committing a crime. Now, the government makes much of, and Judge Rovner mentions the district court's opinion on this, where we're talking about him coming home sooner than expected. He indicated he thought it would take an hour. He then gets home before that and goes into the house. Now, there is nothing in the record to suggest that the agents told him he couldn't go in the house before he spoke to them. This was his house. At this time, he's not charged with a crime. He's not under arrest. He has every right to go into his house. And so I don't think the fact that he chose to go into his house and then come back out of his house is indicative that he's committing a crime. And I do want to address this idea that he was in there destroying evidence. They say that they know he's in the house for some period of time, and he comes out and he's sweaty and nervous. Sweaty and nervous, I think anyone probably would be who's coming home from being called home from work under these circumstances. This is a bad situation for a person, guilty or innocent. And when we get to this question of him coming out of the house, I just don't think he's done anything wrong at that time. If they really believed he was destroying evidence, if the agents are there and they think that's true, as Your Honor knows and is cited in the reply brief, there's an exception to the warrant requirement. You go in. Law enforcement officers doing their due diligence are never going to just let a defendant go into a residence where they believe is evidence. They hear him in there destroying it. If they have a reasonable belief of destruction of evidence, they're going to enter the house. They didn't. So I don't think they can claim that they believe the crime that he was committing was somehow destruction of evidence.
Well, that focuses on the subjective intent of the officers as opposed to the objective facts, and you've kind of skipped over all the evasive maneuvers.
Well, in terms of, I think the one was him entering the house. The other, in terms of him parking the car in the alley, rather than on the street. I also don't think that indicates he's committed a crime. I don't see how it does. He can he parks the car
there. He's avoiding the perimeter that he knows is there, the police presence.
Even if he is, that's not probable cause to arrest somebody. What that might be is reasonable suspicion. I would agree with that. But probable cause to arrest means that he is or has been committing a crime. Not wanting to encounter the police under these circumstances is not may give you reasonable suspicion, but it's not probable cause to arrest him, which they have done the immediate minute they put the handcuffs on him.
Why is that necessarily an arrest?
Well, I think
because the use of handcuffs in a Terry stop is long recognized.
It is, if it is in fact for officer safety. But the facts in this case suggest it could not have been. Officer safety handcuffing takes place at the beginning. You handcuff him so you know you're not going to get hurt because it's a drug investigation. You think he may have a gun. But here, they didn't do that first. First, they patted him down. Then they knew there were no weapons. And then they took his keys so he couldn't leave. And then they asked him if they could search his house. He said, you need a warrant. Then they handcuffed him. That's not officer safety. It cannot be. Those facts just do not support an officer safety detention. And so that's when the arrest happened. At that time, they did not have enough facts that there's...
Mr. Brindley, yes. Under the theory that it seems to me you're proposing that an investigatory stop, which always perhaps carries with it the threat to a police officer, you'd have to put the handcuffs on right away? I don't think the law requires that be the case.
I would draw the analogy. It's not analogous. There's no automobile here. But I give you the logic of the Gant case. Because in Gant, what they essentially say, the Supreme Court says, well, you have an officer safety issue when he's right by the car. But when you've got him out of the car and you know he doesn't have access to weaponry, you can't go putting him in handcuffs and taking him away then because it's too late. You know by that time he's not dangerous. The same logic applies here. If you've already done the pat-down with him unhandcuffed, you know he doesn't have a weapon. You know that he's not dangerous. Then you take his keys, and then you say, can we search your house?
It's not dangerous. I mean, there's factors of relative size of the officers, the number of officers. I mean, there are other things come into play other than not having found a weapon initially.
I suppose that's true, but there's nothing in the record from these officers when they gave their testimony to indicate that they had any concern about him being violent, that he was uncooperative. The only uncooperative thing he did was say, I'd like you to get a warrant before you search my house. And it was only after that they put the handcuffs on him. And I think that the fact that they waited to put the handcuffs on him till after he answered that question the way they didn't want, and then they said, we're going to handcuff you and we're going to take you to the station and make you wait down there, and then he changes his mind, I think that indicates that that was indeed an arrest. It was an investigative detention for officer safety. Because you wouldn't have asked him that question and put the handcuffs on only after that if it was. And if that was an arrest at that time, they did not have sufficient evidence to give them probable cause. The plastic wrap that was found in a trash can, that was in an alleyway. And there's no indication that it was put there by Mr. Beltran rather than by Mr. Vasquez Ramirez, who's also on the scene, or somebody else. There's no connection to Beltran having committed a crime because of the plastic wrap in the alley. The issue of whether he's lying to the officers when he says, I just got here, I think that there's really no way to establish that. I mean, just got here is a fairly subjective consideration of how much time he's been there. I don't think that was sufficient. If he was unlawfully arrested by the police and when he was handcuffed, the consent to search occurred while that was going on. That would be during an unlawful arrest. And if that is the case, then it has to be tainted. So at this time, I would ask to keep whatever time I have remaining for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Brindley. Ms. Wiesenthal?
May it please the Court, Bethany Wiesenthal, United States. The district court rightfully found that the detention of the defendant at the time that he was caught sneaking out of his residence was justified by, at the very least, reasonable suspicion, which very quickly ripened into probable cause for an eventual arrest. I don't think I can say it any better than Your Honor did of listing out all the factors that were available to the agents at the time that they did detain Beltran. They had more than sufficient information at that time to believe that Beltran was involved in criminal activity. Most importantly, the fact that he had lied immediately when Agent Wood went and asked him what he had been doing. And counsel argued that it was somewhat of a vague statement as to just arriving there. Carlos Beltran had been seen 20 to 25 minutes earlier entering his backyard, and then an individual was heard slamming a door upstairs. 20 to 25 minutes can in no way be viewed as just arriving there. The defendant clearly was lying to Agent Wood. Agent Wood knew that and therefore had reasonable suspicion at least, but likely probable cause in order to justify that detention. Counsel mentioned several of the factors or the facts that were within the agent's purview at the time that they detained Carlos Beltran and gave somewhat innocent explanations for each of them as far as sweating and having the ability to enter his own home. Looking at each of those facts independently, there certainly would be innocent explanations for each of those, but combining them together, looking at the context of what the agents knew at the time, they were justified in detaining him.
How much cash was on his person when he emerged from the residence?
I believe it was close to $6,000. Counsel also talked about things that the officers should have done or would have done. The fact that they waited on the porch and around the perimeter of the house while they knew the defendant or someone was inside, and the fact that they didn't immediately handcuff the defendant at the time that he was seen exiting his premises. Well, as far as the agents not entering the house during the time that they knew that someone was inside and after the time that they had seen the defendant enter the backyard, at that point, the agents, first of all, it's irrelevant. And second, the agents were exercising restraint and seeing what it is that was going to transpire and what was going to happen, took steps to ensure their own safety by having agents go around the perimeter of the house. As far as not handcuffing him immediately upon exiting his residence, at that point, again, the agents are exercising restraint, allowing the investigation to unfold. When they did determine that they needed to put handcuffs on him was at the time that Agent Wood testified. That's when he determined he was going to obtain a search warrant and he needed to secure the premises. At that point, obviously, he needed to go and deal with the co-defendant who's standing on the front porch, deal with securing the house, and deal with anything that it is that he needed to do in order to actually obtain that search warrant, which justified at that point him putting the handcuffs on. And if there are no further questions from the court, the government would respectfully request that the court affirm the district court's findings.
Thank you, Ms. Beasenthal. Mr. Brindley?
Regarding the question of whether the facts that were available to the agents and what they amounted to, I would agree that those facts could support a reasonable suspicion to detain, but they do not rise to probable cause to believe he was committing a crime at the time he was handcuffed. The question of whether a investigatory detention has elevated into an arrest, there's a number of factors that go into that are cited in our brief. Those factors include whether he's told that there's a criminal investigation. He was. Whether there's physical touching. There was. And ultimately, whether a reasonable person under the circumstances would be free to leave. And that's not possible here. Because of the way that this happened, I think it's clear that this was an arrest when the handcuffs were placed on him without probable cause. We would ask that it be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brindley. And thank you, Ms. Beasenthal. Ms. Brindley, you have the additional thanks of the court for accepting this appointment.
Of course, Your Honor. Thank you.